3, 2, 1, we are back. Welcome to our Sunday broadcast. And for those of you who are listening to us for the first time, this is our informal podcast where we really talk about whatever's on our minds and we pick out some really bizarre news articles to share with all of you guys. So it's not strictly housing related. If you want all the latest housing news and if you want to frankly know how to prepare for the mini housing boom that is clearly going on, you absolutely positively want to be listening to our daily podcast. Because as we've been predicting, as we started predicting, the yo-yo is starting to go in the opposite direction and the pendulum is swinging back towards a seller's market. And for those of you who have decided to emotionally take yourselves out of quarantine, you are experiencing probably what is going to feel like an amazing boom market. Now, a warning that all of you need to be taking into consideration is that boom market will not last. There's no real reasons to believe that it's going to last much beyond third quarter this year. So early fall, I hope you will have essentially made your money and you're ready for what's going to be an abnormally slow, normally slower part of the year. And you guys are preparing for the following year. We're going to keep you apprised of all the latest information, everything that's relevant to make it so you guys can all, you know, we're all working on this to survive through this first phase of the pandemic, economic deterioration that the global economies are experiencing. And then after that, we're going to be working together to help you guys determine what's next. So, Julie, before we get into your fun story about Elon Musk and Mars, do you have anything housing related you want to share with listeners?
Well, there's all kinds of interesting housing related stuff going on. Talking about what you were just alluding to, there's an interesting article over on Housing Wire that says summer is the new home buying season. And of course, we all know spring has historically been dubbed the real, you know, the spring season. But due to COVID-19, summer is the next spring. So we have seen the strongest time for mortgage purchase applications and, between February and early March. Homebuyers were getting antsy to purchase. So there's lots of stories right now about buyers returning to the market. And the most prevalent thing is the lack of inventory, of course. So let me get up to one of those. The last hurrah before, then this ties right into what we've been predicting, okay? So I don't know why it's delaying me, but basically the last hurrah is talking about how we have historically fewer, I mean, going into this, we had almost no inventory. There's a 19% drop in inventory currently. Pretty much anything that gets out on the market right now will have multiple bids. It said over 60% of new listings in the past 45 days have had multiple bids. And it's not just places like the Bay Area. San Antonio was one, and Fort Worth was another with some of the highest, you know, multiple bid situations. So what does that tell you? If you're working with buyers, they had better have it together because they're probably going to be competing. If you have a listing, you've got to be ready to rumble because when you put it out there, you got it priced right, it's probably going to sell. You're going to have to wade through offers. But please don't believe that this is how it's going to be. For maybe, I mean, what are you thinking, 90, 120 days, maybe 180 absolute outside.
June, July, August, September, yeah, right in there. So listeners, you also want to make sure you're paying attention to the fact that the seller's market, again, that's where the money is going to be made right now. If you're chasing buyers and you think buyers are going to essentially save your bacon come the end of the year, you're going to be really, really deeply disappointed because the buyers are going to be the first ones to take themselves out of the market. Matter of fact, there was an article, I don't know if I sent it to you, Julie, that was talking about some of the macro trends going forward as a result of the pandemic and the lockdown. You know, there's lots of stories about essentially millennials in particular delaying family formation because they're worried about the economy, because they maybe don't have jobs or don't have jobs with enough financial stability. And delaying family formation means delaying buying houses, which is a reversal of the macro trend that we're seeing leading into this pandemic. That's what, anytime, guys, there's a recession, anytime there's any kind of, and you can look at charts going all the way back to the beginning of forever, anytime there's an economic slowdown, people stop, basically they don't have the money or the confidence to purchase, big purchases like houses. And so what they end up doing is they end up staying tenants for a longer period of time, or they end up basically, you know, delaying house purchases forever. Julie and I, when we were selling real estate in Ohio, we had clients that weren't buying their first houses until they were in their 40s because they had lived through, now, so that was in the 90s, right? But they had lived through, you know, the 70s, the whole high interest rate thing.
Super
they lived
high
through
interest rates.
A really tough economy in the 80s for most, you know, normal Americans. And so they were having to delay until they're in their 40s buying their first house because they couldn't financially do it until then. So there's a lot of, there's going to be a lot of big changes that are going to happen maybe 10, 15 years down the road that they're going to attribute to this time. But the other one I read, which was kind of counterintuitive, and they're saying a lot of people, because of their fears about the economy, are going to delay start having families.
Yeah.
And now some demographers are expecting, despite the fact that we have all these millennials and, you know, a baby making, you know, age, that they're going to not be doing it. And then they're now predicting there could be, because of this pandemic that's leading to the recession, depression, that they're expecting there to be, you know, again, 10 or 15 years from now, a lack of, you know, consumers in the market. So that's kind of an interesting, fascinating trend to follow.
Yeah.
But these are all, look, guys, in the short run, we can talk forever. I was on someone else's podcast the other day, Chris Waters' podcast, actually.
Oh,
and I think it went for like 2 hours.
Yep.
And we were talking about all these big trends, and we had a lot of fun. But then I realized after about hour one that all it really was is just a mental gymnastics trying to, you know, see whose crystal ball had the clear vision of the future. Neither one of ours did, because you really can't tell what's going to happen. There was another article that I was reading just this morning on Sunday that was talking about the fact that, you know, there, if the pandemic that caused this global shutdown has resulted in this global, you know, recession, depression, whatever word you want to use. What if the pandemic causes another global shutdown? Or what if there's regional shutdowns? What if there's, like, so going forward, that's the all the uncertainty that we hadn't sort of mentally put together in our heads when we were telling you guys the new normal is abnormal. But I can definitely see how in the next, you know, until there's a vaccine or until there's essentially an acceptance that there never will be a vaccine and they have to go the herd immunity route, mm-hmm. or if there's some sort of working therapy, whatever, until there's a resolution where people can feel like, okay.
Well, you have to have confidence back.
Right, exactly.
Confidence to go out, confidence to spend money, confidence to invest.
That's really
until
what
that
it is.
Comes back, you know, I think it's going to be very uneven. I mean, look at this, you know, the housing market crisis. Well, they're already calling it the housing market crisis. Will arrive once the mortgage deferral benefit ends. So that's,
let me finish making that
the
point.
The up and down.
Well, so what if we see over the next year we see patches of this country that get closed down? Mm-hmm. What if there's another outbreak in New York and they decide to close New York down? You know, they're going to love the people that run New York love closing New York down, right? That's like a hobby for them. What about these other, you know, seemingly blue states where the governors are essentially hair trigger ready to seize power and, mm-hmm. you know, shut everything down. If they see what in their opinion is going to necessitate as far as an increase in the virus, how much is it going to have to increase for them to shut their local economy down? And this pattern of uncertainty is going to really spin off in some other interesting ways. And again, thinking just, you know, big picture here, there are going to be parts of the country where people were felt essentially that their government overreached, mm-hmm. and took too many of their rights away. And those people are going to leave those states never to return. Maybe they were thinking about leaving Michigan before, but maybe this is just the very...
Well, Chicago, with their new tax, that's maybe a tipping point for them.
Right.
Where maybe they had just about had it, then they were in lockdown, they didn't have a backyard, and now they're going to be taxed to oblivion.
Yep.
You know what it reminds me of, Tim? You remember that, I think it was an HBO show that we watched called The Leftovers?
Yeah.
And you know how there were certain towns that really were untouched by their version of weirdness, and they became like little urban
oases,
or non-urban but suburban oases. I wonder whether something like that could happen, where you have something like a Montana or that wasn't really that affected, and it becomes like, okay, you know, maybe I can live there and I'm leaving my urban. I mean, Diana Olick was just reporting on condo sales were dramatically lower. People are leaving condos, and that interest is going to the countryside, or at least going to suburbia. So what's going to happen? I mean, are we going to have, remember in the recession caused by different things, the see-through towers where nobody was really living there? What's going to happen to all that?
I remember that in Vegas when we lived there.
That was creepy.
It was. Well, so to your point, though, you're going to see whole states that handled the pandemic differently than other states,
yes.
Right? So let's use, for example, the juxtaposition of, say, for example, Michigan versus Texas, or just any of these states that, you know, California versus Texas. Those are, you know, obvious, you know, completely into the spectrum. Well, okay, if California all of a sudden decides to have this sort of, you know, uneven shutting down, opening up, mm-hmm. if all of a sudden the taxes continues to go up, if all of a sudden they start to seize more power, if all of a sudden now these robot dogs that Julie and I were reporting on are now a common sight, yes, guys, robot dogs walking around Central Park
to police
telling
you.
People, telling people to social distance. They have drones flying over beaches in, I think it was California. They're telling people to social distance. It doesn't take long for the most progressive, open-mind liberal person to say this is enough. And they're going to want to leave, especially if you combine it with taxes and uncertainty about them being able to earn a viable living. People are just going to leave. And so what I suspect you're going to see is you're going to see migration trends shift really towards states that, and it's going to be predicated not just on the weather and employment, but how they treated people during the pandemic. Yeah. And then again, you're going to see probably states, because states do compete for big business for the sake of taxes. So I think you're going to see big states essentially, or you're going to see certain states take the lead and really get ahead of the curve as far as being the new place to live.
Yeah. So, and maybe even cities within states will treat things differently.
That's true. So these are the kind of fun things. Again, we can talk about these things forever. It's not very practical and tactical because it really doesn't square you away for the next 4 to 6 months is where all of our main focus has to be. But when we say, and when you guys hear other people say that there's going to be big, huge shifts in just society and how people live and interact, it really is true. This is one of those sort of amazing and /scary, uncertain, weird times in history where it's really impossible to, sort of predict all the different ways that human behavior will change. But for the most part, here's the thing you do know. Eventually, over time, whatever the change is, as almost violent and uncertain as it feels, it always ends up being better. And so what you're going to experience, I think, in your own world, as long as you accept moving forward and stop trying to fight moving back, you're going to see, I think, a whole new world open up as far as possibilities for yourself. And what we are preaching for all of you guys to do is make sure that you're really paying a lot of attention on how to become the listing agent. For example, Julie just said to you, there's a huge shortage of listings out there, right? Well, that's going to be definitely true for the rest of the year until there isn't. And when there isn't, be careful here, Julie. And when there isn't, what's going to happen is you're going to have essentially a lot of houses that would have otherwise hit the market as being very motivated, distressed sellers. Those sellers are then going to start putting their houses on the market after all these mortgage deferment programs run their course. And those mortgage deferment programs will all run their course next year. And there won't be able to do extensions probably much beyond a year. So all the houses that are sort of maybe the people are unemployed or maybe they're underemployed, maybe they're not getting whatever, their lives have changed. They now have to move. Maybe they're moving because they're fearful of the virus, or maybe they're going to move because their job is not what it was and they have better opportunities in other states. This is going to create an enormous amount of inventory.
Well, let me supplement this with some actual stats here. Moody's Analytics warned last month that as many as 30% of Americans with mortgages could default on their home loans in the aftermath of the pandemic. This is talking about after the mortgage forbearances and deferments are over. So, this whole article is talking about they called it the last hurrah before the housing crash, right? So you've got to be careful how you're thinking about this. And, I've been doing lots of coaching calls lately where, people have been asking, is it really, I've got somebody who doesn't have to sell today but wants to sell. Is this really a good time? And, in normal times, we joke about agents' typical script being, now is a great time to sell.
But now
but
it
you
is.
Know what? Now really is a great time to sell because you've got to beat that very predictable coming inventory. Not everybody even knew about forbearances, and people who took them, not everybody's going to get their job back or their business back, or whatever, their restaurant they're running back, and there will be more inventory.
Yep.
I mean, it's just a matter of timing at this point.
It's also worth mentioning, too, there are going to be a lot more articles coming out talking about inflation versus deflation. This is something Julie and I have been talking to you guys about with intensity for the past 90 days, because it's important that you understand what's going to happen on the other side of all this money being pumped into the economy. Because the reality of it is that we're not going to get out of this without a lot of bumps and bruises. And so here's a for example. If you have some, trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars being pumped into the economy, we all can, in the short run, can celebrate it and say it was necessary. Maybe even because of the takings clause in the Fifth Amendment, we say that it was legally imperative that the government essentially keeps everyone afloat because of the fact that the government, in essence, because of their decisions, have decided to shut everyone down. So we can make that argument, Fifth Amendment, takings clause, Google it yourself.
Yep.
But really, I think what needs to be discussed is what's going to happen over the next maybe 5 years, but really realistically 2.5 years. Lawrence Jung, for example, of the National Association of Realtors, he essentially said, and we told you guys about this last week, that he's expecting there to be a very noticeable bout of inflation that's going to happen in 5 years. Other people, I have not heard a single person say 5 years. Most people are saying 24 months on the outside. And I was listening to a great podcast yesterday with our friend Peter Schiff. He's our neighbor. And he was talking about the fact that inflation, so what is inflation? Inflation is the cost of things increasing. So the argument against there being inflation as a result of this, you know, quantitative easing money printing is that, hey, why wasn't there inflation back after 07 and 08 and 09 and all that, you know? Well, the answer was there was, but it was inflation in asset prices. It was inflation in things like houses. It was inflation in actual asset securities. You know, stock market went up. It was inflation in collector cars. There was a huge collector car boom that ran its course and ended about 2 years ago. There was inflation in art, inflation in things where people could put their money, where they felt at the very least the asset in which they're putting their money would hold the value. That's where the inflation was. The inflation did not make its way to things like food, did not make its way to airline prices, or did not make its way to, you know, the normal commodities that virtually everyone will, you know, and has to consume. So the inflation did not adversely affect, what, 99% of America, because we're only talking about a small group of people that were buying up stocks, who are, you know, essentially real estate obviously got more expensive and that affected everyone. But for the most part, the inflation went to places where normal people wouldn't have suffered from it. That's going to be differently this time in the opinion of Peter and other people. So what the most predictable path is going to happen, and again, I read a lot about this. Julie's got us reading The Economist every month, or every, yeah, monthly magazine, and we read online too. It's very fascinating. Is there is an excess amount of supply in the markets right now of everything. Car tires, of food, so much, you know, you've heard the stories about the fact that farmers are having to euthanize their, you know, animals because the fact that they don't have, the supply chain won't take the animals once processed to market, and there's all these other disruptions in the marketplace, and there's car tires that have gone unsold. There's massive amount of cars that have gone, just everything you can possibly imagine. There's a huge oversupply, which will cause a deflationary cycle to happen right now. So what you're going to see is you are going to see prices drop. You're going to see prices drop on virtually everything that would be essentially a consumer item. So people are going to be really confused, all this government and trillions of dollars coming in, and yet things appear to be going on sale. And they will be going on sale. You know, TVs, clothes. There, look, here's a, well, I shouldn't say this in front of Julie, but I was actually shopping for Julie for Christmas presents and other things. And I'll tell you why. Because her favorite dress designer, she's looking at me right now as I say this, her favorite dress designer is Dolce & Gabbana, and they're for sale, and they're the only place you can get them without going direct is going to be through Neiman Marcus, and guess what? Neiman Marcus is in bankruptcy, so I was on Neiman Marcus's website looking for Dolce & Gabbana to go on sale.
Good thinking.
And it was. Okay, surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's just a silly, you know, example, but you know, we want to get a new TV for our bedroom. Same thing. I shopped around and you can get a massive OLED, you know, 4K, whatever the thing can, you know, see into the future kind of thing. And those things have gotten dirt cheap. Well, here's what's going to happen. All the stuff that would have been consumed over the last 90 days, and maybe even for the next 30 days going forward, all that stuff is going to have to be sold. And once that stuff is sold, then you're going to see the inflation.
Yeah, I saw an article this morning about how many cars didn't sell, like new cars that are just sitting around, and how this might be one of the best months to get a deal.
Well, I'll tell you what. So here's the other thing that high-end or any kind of car financing, the leases in particular, so their prediction of in value on leases is completely wrong. And so there's going to be a lot of car lenders who are going to absolutely suffer because of the fact that when the cars get returned, they're going to be worth less than what the residual value on the lease is. Well, here's another just anecdotal piece of evidence. Hertz rental car essentially is in bankruptcy now.
I saw that.
And I mean, what'd that take for a huge company like Hertz to go into bankruptcy?
It's less than 90 days.
Yep. And what they're doing is they're selling off their...
their rental inventory?
Yeah. And they started out selling... They had a big fleet of evidently yellow Corvettes. Yeah, Hertz rental car, yellow.
Yeah.
And so these were more expensive. And so they're dumping these strategically on the market, but obviously people picked up on it.
Car auctions are going to get weird this
year. It's going to get crazy. And just, you know, Julie and I are car nerds, the reason we always reference car information. But I think automotive sales are a very...
It's telling, though, because
it is.
You know, they don't
it's
have
confidence.
To do something. It's confidence.
Right.
You know, are they moving up, moving down, sideways?
I think, personally, I think
financing.
car sales are the greatest indicator of the health of an economy, because you can, even more so than a house, it's certainly more than other consumer items, because you don't have to buy a new car. You buy a new car only when you're feeling optimistic and you're feeling that tomorrow's going to be better than today. Whereas a house, you might buy it because you need a place to live.
Right.
Right. So a house has a lot more, you know, need to it versus a car, which you can just keep your old jalopy running, which was the trend during the last recession, too. Mm-hmm. People started keeping their cars longer. And you saw, you know, places like Rock Auto and places that were selling auto parts, they started going through the roof. But these are the interesting things that are kind of fascinating to think about. Like, you know, if people start keeping their cars longer, that is going to create what? A need for people that know how to work on cars that are maybe out of warranty. So there, that's going to create new opportunity. Whereas, because people have gone through this cycle in the last 10 years, then nobody keeps a car for longer than a few years. And people have just gotten used to upgrading them constantly. And that's obviously fueled the huge automotive industry, which is now mostly on its heels. I was reading the two of you listening that are Formula One fans. Formula One is basically completely screwed right now as far as the race series. McLaren and Aston Martin, and there's other manufacturers too, which are basically saying, because of this pandemic, because of 90 days of a bad economy, where essentially we don't know where we're going to get money to build cars anymore, let alone to continue racing. So, I mean, now what's going to happen? There's going to be probably something new that arrives that's going to, satisfy the needs of all the car nerds that like to watch racing. Sure. And maybe it's Formula One Part 2, and maybe it's going to be, who knows? But remember, bankruptcy, just because it's the end of one thing does not mean it's the end of that thing forever. That thing can change and become something else. And so those are the types of things that you need. When you're hearing the bad news, you also maybe should think about what the flip side to that coin is as well.
Speaking of which, here's my segue into the flip side. Americans are buying bikes, kayaks, and hammocks as lockdowns ease. These are the following stocks that are benefiting. Okay, so this was a really well-written article, I thought, talking about how the quarantine does strange things to you, and how many people that thought never in a million years would they have an above-ground pool, much less actually use it regularly. So let's see. So for example, let's see here. Let me get to the stats. L.L. Bean, CEO, says sales of L.L. Bean's outdoor furniture rose 80% last month, and hammock sales jumped 150%. You know, on our walk, we were noticing how many hammocks were around.
Yeah,
we were. Now the exploration phase of the lockdown has begun. Bike sales at L.L. Bean have soared 400%. Kayaks and boats are up 96%, and that's with almost all of L.L. Bean's actual stores being closed. Okay, so only 25% of their sales come from actual stores, so they're a company that's benefiting. RV maker Winnebago Industries has soared 61% in the last month, okay? So that one data point is all you need to know that the current recession, see, there you go, already being called a recession, is entirely different than in the financial crisis. In 2009, Winnebago tumbled to only $3 a share. It's up nearly 20 times since then and closed last week at an all-time high. Shares of Pool Corporation, which makes supplies for pools, are up 29% over the past month. Okay, so they're talking about investing in things. Zoom, we've already talked about. Peloton is doing very well. Slack Technologies. And let's see, any industry with a crowd is impacted and won't return to full normalcy until there's a vaccine. So they talked about that. Yeti Holdings, which makes cooler. We have some Yeti cups. They make cooler steel cups and other outdoor gear. Is expected to be coming back. Let's see. I think that's all of the interesting stocks, but who would have thought stocks like Yeti and Winnebago and, you know, a lot of the L.L. Bean stuff is doing so well.
I've got one that I'll bring up in particular because I just want to see your face when I say this on the podcast. All right.
What's
so
that?
On Seeking Alpha, I was reading a different article. Uh-oh. And the article was all about the sex doll.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. Did you read that? Did you see that article?
No, but I can see how that would probably be doing well.
Okay, but get this. The sex doll industry has taken off. And so,
unintended consequences.
Yes. Yeah, none of these companies are publicly traded, but they're saying that they think some of these companies will go public. Yeah. Do private offerings. But the reason was, obviously, is because people are quarantined. And but the real contributing factor, and this is really silly, but all those Tumblr and I mean, you and I are too old to, you know what I'm talking about, the sites where people basically they're just essentially booty calls through an app.
Right.
Yeah. So that is, people aren't doing that now. And so those apps are losing money. They're losing subscribers, and the sex doll business is going through the roof.
That's
amazing. You didn't react nearly as shocked.
Sorry, because you warned me.
Oh, next time I won't.
So just to turn that ship around, something interesting, because I don't want to talk about
that. Hold on, tee it up better so it's fun. Okay. All right, so just in case you're really sick of all the quarantine news and the draconian governors, and you're tired of the Democrats.
COVID, good grief.
You're sick of the word COVID. You're sick of the word coronavirus. You're just sick of it all. Well, no, we're not suggesting that you end it. We're suggesting that you
hitch a ride on the SpaceX. So SpaceX is poised for a defining moment with the first humans on their rocket. I think this is really exciting and very interesting. Elon Musk is about to face his biggest test after two decades as a space entrepreneur, launching real humans into orbit. Now, they've been using his rockets to go to the International Space Station for quite some time to deliver supplies, but that's been without humans. So I think it's this Wednesday. And part of the story is how quickly, in comparison to its competitor, which was also funded at the same time, when I think it was Obama decided that it was going to be taken on by private industry, they gave money to both Boeing and SpaceX. Well, Boeing's been around, forever and was known as being very innovative. Well, Musk, in only two decades, has already surpassed them from having no rockets to actually launching people this Wednesday from Cape Canaveral. I think that's going to be awesome to watch. I've been watching the astronaut interviews and stuff like that. It's very cool. Very cool. I saw the, I can't remember which one it was when I was a kid. I was about 12. I saw one of the, I think it was one of the shuttle launches from Cape Canaveral. It was amazing. If you guys are anywhere near there, our Florida listeners, totally worth getting somewhere near that so you can see it. It's super cool.
When we lived in Texas, we'd go down to, what was that place? That island?
Padre Island.
And there was a little real estate boom going on down in that part of Texas because people could see the SpaceX stuff taking off from the wherever it was nearby.
But
you looked over part of the Gulf, and there's where they took off.
Incredible.
And so all the people that had a view, not just of the Gulf, but of the launching pad for the SpaceX rockets down in Padre Island, that's pretty amazing. So there's another little micro market real estate thing.
Super cool. No matter what you think of Elon Musk, I mean, that guy is totally incredibly smart. Doesn't think like anybody I've ever heard interviewed. And I thought it was interesting the where the astronauts are sitting. Doesn't that remind you of the inside of a Tesla anyway?
Yeah.
So anyway, just kind of interesting. I liked that story.
But to your story, though, Elon Musk is not signing himself up to go on any of his own rockets.
No, I noticed that.
And when I heard him interviewed, asked if he's planning on going to Mars, he said, no, there's too much work to do here. But, and it's only a one-way trip. You don't come back.
That's right.
What happens to your body in that long of a trip in space is extraordinary because you have no natural, so you're in this little tube and you're, whatever it is, and you're flying to Mars and it takes forever. There's nothing blocking other than the ship itself, the radiation that comes from the sun. And right here on Earth, we have lots of things that block the radiation that keeps all of us from baking, right? But when you're in a rocket ship going from here to Mars, there's nothing. So that whole prolonged exposure to essentially,
they don't even know what'll happen, but it doesn't sound good. So.
Well, they're saying that's the thing that basically is the most troublesome to overcome.
Yeah. Now this one's going to the International Space Center.
Right. I know, but eventually, where they're going. And by the way, speaking of badasses, you know that Tom Cruise is filming or just finished filming part of a new movie on the International Space Station for real.
How cool is that?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Awesome. I want to see the new Top Gun. I'm excited about that.
From our generation.
That's very awesome.
That's right. Up in the International Space
Super
Station.
Cool.
Go Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I'm going to follow that for sure. Well, so my next story, I will just chalk this up to, I'm starting to keep track of strangest things that I've had to Google. Okay, so my Google search was, just to be safe, are cicadas and locusts not the same thing? Because I had a chat with my brother going, he's like, it's bad enough that we're dealing with a pandemic, but you guys are dealing with earthquakes and hurricanes too. And I chatted back, as long as there's no locusts, I think I'm okay. Because one thing after the next in 2020. Well, millions of cicadas are expected to emerge in the next in the this year. Okay.
The reason that's happening is because you're using Apple News.
I know. Okay, yeah. So Cicada is expected to emerge after 17 years underground because why? It's 2020. As if we didn't have enough to worry about with giant murder hornets invading the U.S., global pandemic, and unemployment, millions of 17-year cicadas will emerge, especially in southwest Virginia, parts of North Carolina, and West Virginia. Luckily, cicadas are harmless to humans. At most, the noise they make could become a serious nuisance. And I did Google, and, you know, locusts are more like grasshoppers and do all the damage to the crops. Cicadas are just loud and annoying.
Yeah, so, well, there but you go. For people that don't know what a cicada looks like, Julie, tell them how to spell it so they can actually Google it.
Yep, it's C-I-C-A-D-A-S. Okay. And we experienced this.
In Ohio
several times, and they, what would you say, they don't really look like anything except themselves.
They look like something that you don't ever want to see.
Yeah, they look a little alien. It's extra weird that they come out of the ground.
Every
and then they
years.
Molt. I remember my dad took a slow motion photo thing of a cicada losing its basically its skin, and then it leaves this weird paper-like shell behind. It's very strange. It's like molting like a snake does.
Yeah, but I just realized.
Odd.
So you remember, so now that we're...
I do remember.
Now we're having an informal... You know what I'm going to say? The Tom Cruise movie where the aliens were basically...
Oh, yeah.
They're in the ground, and essentially...
That's right.
They all came out of the ground.
Oh, yeah, just like cicadas, and they'd been there the whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, 2020 would be the year for that.
Well, but... So the problem with the cicadas, guy, is not only do they have these big red eyes, and they absolutely look freaky. But they have the loudest, shrill, unbelievably loud noise.
And it's not just one of them. It's millions of them doing it at the same time.
And when you hear these things, I mean, I cannot, there are no words I can use to describe when you get, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of them together.
Well, it'd be great prison ground torture.
It is so incredibly loud. And they come out of the ground every basically almost 20 years. You know, make cicada babies and go back in the ground again. I mean, it's just crazy.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, so they're all out like, it's a party!
Yeah, and then one day they literally just go away.
They're just gone.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
So that was my most weird story. In things that I love, we have... let me just open this. You know, we've been continuing to report on all these changes in the cities after lockdown and what animals are doing. And of course it's okay. So here's the story with the coyotes in charge. The yard goes wild. And somebody was reporting on the fact that they had only seen in 27 years of living in my house, I'd seen a coyote on my property only twice. Now it happens all the time. They wander around voguing, sashaying, acting like I'm not even there. Sometimes I get the feeling they're giving me the hi-hat. Okay. So this is just talking about coyotes and foxes and all of these things that are taking over different cities. So beware, it might be in your backyard. That was just a little story.
Well, this story you found was better. Hilarious real estate listing photos show Bigfoot inside a home.
Oh my gosh.
And this was hilarious.
So
I got it, Julie.
You've got it.
And
okay.
So the Zillow, so basically, here's the picture. You guys should Google this because it really will give you a chuckle. There's someone that went to the effort. They have a house for sale. I mean, obviously, it's great PR. Here we are talking about it.
You should click on all the pictures because they are freaking hilarious.
I don't have to go through your Apple News ad vortex. That's the reason I'm not doing it.
I'm not going to send them that way anymore.
Right. So the real estate listing photos literally show a really good Bigfoot. Like, an unbelievable. If I were to see this thing out in the wild, I would definitely freak out. I mean, he has long fingernails. His hands have spots all over him.
Okay, here's the pictures.
Right. And so the funny part is it shows him.
He's reading his cookbook is edible mushrooms.
Of course.
It's so freaking funny.
But he's making cookies, too.
Yes. Yeah, it's actually living in the house.
Look, he's having a beer.
So great.
Reading the paper.
There's his cookies. He's online.
What does he
want? And the caption is, room to Zoom. He's on a Zoom meeting in his home office. Let's see. He's doing yoga. Is this great? Humans of New York, he's reading.
He's laying in bed. He's having a sleep
bed. Here he is gardening.
With a little hat on.
And then they have the pictures without him in case you want to see what the house actually looks like.
You guys.
But what a hilarious marketing thing. And I have the stats on this here. This is a house for just under $1 million in Fenton, California. Let's see. I think it said that he had had like 450,000 views or something. It's something crazy.
What a cool little house too, right?
This is a great little house.
Yeah.
Let's see. The sellers were down with it, immediately supported the idea. and hoped it would bring a bit of levity to people in their home on their home buying adventure. Let's see. An overwhelming amount of interest in folks calling to schedule appointments and is anticipating offers soon. So, yeah, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if this is going to be some kind of a trend.
Well, hey, okay, let's break this down just from a marketing perspective. Obviously, it's a great way to get attention.
Yeah.
It'll be a great way mostly.
Very creative.
But if the house is overpriced, or if the house is a condition issue or a location issue.
Too much Bigfoot fur.
The best marketing in the world is not going to get the house sold.
That's true.
But so this is a, I'll tell you what, this is a great gimmick for. That agent should be thinking in terms of essentially, you know, assuming it was an agent that came up with this idea, because it is so funny. They should, I would carry that football as far as I could run with it, right? And every listing
so
you get from now on,
it,
you could play spot Bigfoot and you could start building a little, you know, just a fun thing. Might last 4 to 6 months, make people laugh. And you might pick up some, you know, fairly loony sellers that are listing with you just because of your Bigfoot gimmick.
But you know, it could be a thing. So I credit for creativity.
Oh,
for
fantastic.
Sure.
And Julie, we have got to get a costume like that for me to wear to scare Zoe.
Oh my gosh. Shoot. Yeah.
Where are we going to find that? That's so good.
Back to Amazon.
But you know what? I just had a thought.
What?
Why are we assuming it's a person in a costume?
Maybe it really is Bigfoot.
Why do we assume it's not
really
Bigfoot?
Look at the lot. He could have come straight out of the woods.
But seriously, that could be Bigfoot.
And it is in California where that kind of thing probably would happen.
But maybe the joke's on us.
I know, right?
Maybe. Hold on.
I know.
Maybe Bigfoot has a real estate license.
It could be. That is the realtor. That's the real story, right?
Maybe we're making the mistake of assuming that's not a human.
It's so funny.
You see?
I know, and you know what? At the very bottom of that article, it said that the idea happened originally from a realtor in Ohio last year. Somebody did that. So, just as a sideline. All right.
Well, you know, Julie, since we're talking about crazy things.
Yeah.
So, because we like talking about stuff like this because it's fun, you know, between the locusts and the cicadas and the earthquakes and the, well, so the UFO story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's getting more legs now. And essentially, what appears is if there's going to be more information and imagery and videos that are going to be released showing more evidence of the fact that there are truly unidentified flying objects.
That's just amazing.
It is amazing. But here's the thing that makes me wonder. So one of my personal coaching clients, LeGrand LeBrash, as you know, he used to be an F-18 fighter pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him about that UFO thing, and I sent him the videos and whatnot. And so, of course, because he was an F-18 pilot, he saw and heard things that, you know, a plebe like me never would have seen. And he was looking at the avionics on the screen through the heads up, and he was noticing that the thing that they were tracking was doing things that, you know, essentially what no normal plane could do. So he was looking at it through an educated eye, and he thought, and this is what his thought was, he said, Tim, that might very well be a UFO, right? All the, you know, all that. But he said what it could very well be is some sort of you know, drone that's using technology that his point was, why are these things flying over military bases?
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking was, well, it's because it's not a UFO. It's not from another planet. It's actually our technology, and they're flying them over military bases because it's restricted airspace.
Makes sense.
And they then don't have to worry about civilians seeing what are essentially advanced, you know, very, very, very advanced drones. So with that in mind, there was a story that I read yesterday, which was fascinating. The U.S. has a laser, I mean, honest to God, that can shoot down drones. And these lasers are being, did you see the story?
I just saw the headline.
And they're being mounted on warships because obviously, you know, one of the worst case scenario if you're out to sea is a big mass of drones that all have, you know, are all on kamikaze missions with, you know, some sort of explosives attached to them, which are just basically being steered into a, you know, a target. So the U.S. Navy has an honest-to-God laser that can shoot down flying objects. All right. Now, if you tie in the UFO thing, and then if you tie in the laser thing, I think what LeGrand said is very viable, that there actually is technology that we have that's so far beyond anything we can possibly conceive, that the UFOs that they're reporting now, even though they're being seen by, you know, F-18 fighter pilots, and the F-18 pilots are just, you know, beside themselves, not believing it's real, I would not be surprised at all if those are those things that we see flying are using some sort of propulsion system that nobody knows about yet,
yep.
that are using technology that nobody knows about yet, that somehow at some advanced DARPA wing, and I mean, you know, we're way ahead of our skis, but this is what Sunday is all about.
Something to watch, right?
We talk about real estate and price reductions and interest rates and freaking...
and aliens.
We talk cicadas. About all that stuff during the week. During the weekend,
yep.
it's loony
time.
Too
bad for you. you never know.
We talk about Bigfoot.
I did see that. You know, it's just like, this has got to be the strangest year ever. At least I certainly hope it will be. I'm hoping next year won't be even weirder.
It's impossible that it won't be weirder because yeah. we're in a long-term cycle of oddity and change.
Oh, I'm keeping track of new words, too, that I like. Okay, so this week, the word digitopia, which is people finding utopia online because they've had to be quarantined so long, and what they're listening to and watching and all that kind of stuff. So digitopia is a good word. But I also saw in new listings the phrase, and I wonder if this is going to be a box to check when you enter something in the MLS, quote, quarantine ready. Like, okay, what does that mean? But anyway, words that I thought were interesting.
No, that's good.
Yeah,
you know.
Collecting them. Last week it was doom scrolling. That was a new word. So, yeah.
It is
nuts.
Things
are changing, right?
Well, so if you're listening to us on a Sunday, hopefully basically you have your week all logged out for, you know, planned out. But if you don't, here's what you have to focus on. Number one, what you don't do. What you don't do is anything creative. So you can, you know, like Julie and I do on the weekends, you can basically be a little creative and let your mind go and relax. And it actually helps for Julie and I. It helps us to reset because our normal weeks are so drilled down, coaching agents and coaching brokers and
career coaching.
Right. And talking about, you know, how to adapt your business and how to, you know, all the things that we do for a living. Right. I mean, we've become sort of, you know, micro famous in the real estate world or micro famous in the general world and famous in the real estate world because of the fact that you guys have learned over the years that, hey, guess what? Tim and Julie actually know what they're talking about. But during the weekends, we do a lot of, you know, we do a lot of pleasure reading. We listen to different books. Julie and I will go on different walks. We have our little nerdy hobbies that we do. Julie makes jewelry, you know, things like that. Do find release valves like that so that you can essentially allow your brain to sort of calm down from all the sort of manic overexposure to all the uncertainty that's certainly facing all of us. Just remember in your heart that no matter what comes next, what will be needed more than anything are people that know how to solve other people's problems. And that really is the truth. Look, there's going to be some massive macro, that means large scale trends that are going to happen that none of us would have predicted. Mm-hmm. There could be if the, you know, different states start to have, you know, differing levels of reaction to a return of the pandemic. You could see mass migration out of those states. You could see civil unrest in those states. You could see all kinds of political uncertainty. You could see states like, I'll tell you right now, I think Texas, you know, we're in Puerto Rico, but and Puerto Rico even has a chance to do something amazing. If states should be looking at this as an opportunity to be, you know, not on the defensive, but on the offensive, they should start looking for ways to improve their economic situation long term by making it so that they don't put themselves in a situation where they're always going to be remembered as essentially not respecting the Constitution and people's rights. That's what's going to happen. You know, people are always going to remember which states essentially overreached, which political parties overreached, where people finally had enough and they started to, because there's no certainty. Nobody knows how far you can actually push people. So, you know, if you opened up, everyone's feeling good. Oh, this, you know, we're able to go out 6 feet apart, masks on everywhere. Julie and I were out and about yesterday. It is definitely weird. Oh, well, at least it's a relief valve, right? It's almost like steam coming out of the kettle. That's how a lot of people feel right now. Mm-hmm. How are people going to feel and how are people going to react when they try to put that steam back in the kettle? What if they then start saying there's going to be no new lockdowns? There's going to be new quarantines and quarantine. This is quarantine 1.0. What if, you know, a year or two from now, it's quarantine 2.0 and 3.0 or maybe 10.0. What is actually happening is people are going to either go of one of two ways. They're just going to become sedate and easily controlled and manipulated, waiting for, you know, essentially Big Brother, Orwellian type future to tell them what to think and what to do and when it's safe to go outside and, you know, I better, you know, whatever, right? Or people are going to say, screw this, I'm going to revolt. What most likely will happen, and revolting not in the sense they're going to pick up guns and pickaxes, revolt in the sense that they're going to start, as you're already seeing macro trends, people react this way. you're going to start seeing people leave. They're going to go to the countryside. They're going to go to states that basically don't overreach. They're going to start doing things. They're going to make themselves less beholden to a domineering big brother. So you're going to see one of two things. Some people are going to be, I read this as a great article. Some people are basically going to reserve themselves or allow themselves to become, you know, house cats for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And other people are going to decide to become big cats. And they're going to decide to break out of the cages and go yep. places where they otherwise wouldn't have gone. Where are you going, listeners? What do you feel like you're going to do? Are you going to try to shelter in place for the rest of your life and wait around for the next shoe to drop? And here's the other thing I find disheartening, kind of worrisome, but also if you kind of move past the, wait, what if there is no vaccine? Mm-hmm. What happens if there's no vaccine? What happens if there's no therapy? So that leaves one thing. It's this whole herd immunity concept. Explain to them what that means.
Well, the idea is when you have enough immunity amongst the population that the virus cannot take as much control, people stop getting, the numbers of people stop getting sick and stop dying. And then, you know, the whole worry about overwhelming the hospitals goes away and it becomes more accepted. Like, you know, maybe every year you get a flu shot and you get a COVID shot, or maybe there is no COVID shot and you just have to build your immunity. You know, we don't have vaccines for everything. Even, you know, when we get sick or when Zoe gets sick, even though she's had the flu shot, they still test her to see if maybe she's got some other kind of flu. And it just, you know, we all accept the fact that you go out, you can get sick and, you know, you got to deal with it. And sometimes you're going to be home for a week and sometimes you're going to wind up in the hospital.
Well,
so, but the more immunity the herd, the crowd has, the less severe it is, the less likely you are to get it. You know, so we have to get there. And what is it, Sweden or Switzerland? One of them has basically
Sweden
achieved that. They're not quite at, I think you have to get to, I can't remember if it's 40% or 60%. I think it's 60% has to have immunity. And then it becomes less communicable. It's less of a menace. I do think that that's probably where we're headed.
Originally, when they said we all have to be quarantined because we're worried about the healthcare system being overwhelmed, everyone was okay. Everyone's compliant.
Cool. Yeah.
Even the most liberty-minded, you know, libertarians like Julie and I, we said, okay, that does kind of make sense. But now what's going to happen is essentially those governors and some of these other, like all these little Pol Pot wannabes are all coming out of the woodwork and they're realizing that they can seize power and influence. And they're sure enough, there are millions of Americans that are more than willing to essentially be compliant and all become house cats. So that creates more impetus behind loss of control and people giving up their rights and all this. So these are the types of things that you have to decide which direction you're probably going to go. The whole idea of herd immunity probably is the only resolution, okay? Mm-hmm. But here's the crazy thing. What if some states don't really have, we're not going to allow herd immunity as soon as we see the new cases go above a certain...
lock you back down.
Right. So guys, here, think about this. Why is there this big push for testing? Why? I know why. It's so that basically they can say there's an increase and we can lock people back down.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality of it is a lot of you have already had this or will have it and will have no symptoms from it. Or your symptoms will be mild and you'll get over it really quick. Or you'll have it and you know, being completely asymptomatic, nothing happened, you have the antibodies, your body fought it off. And evidently there's essentially two immune systems your body has. Can mm-hmm. you, do you want to explain that?
I think primary and secondary. And your primary is there. And I'm certainly no virologist or epidemiologist, but, you know, based on my understanding, there is primary immunity. And that's like you kind of, you know, when you get days where you just kind of feel like you're under the weather and maybe you're catching something, but then by the next 2 or 3 days later, you're totally fine.
Right.
That's because your primary immune system took care of it, scared it off, fought it. It did not take hold in your body. Secondary immunity is, I believe, how they find the antibodies.
Right.
And you know, you are actually sick, even though you didn't feel that sick in some cases, you actually had it and it was trying to kick your butt, but you prevailed. It's like a deeper immunity if it gets that far.
Yep.
And that's what they're testing. So there's even people that probably fought it off, but aren't showing the antibody because it didn't get a hold of them that bad.
Well,
that's my layman's understanding anyway.
Mine too. Over time, what we're going to discover and what they're going to discover is really the only real solution to this, or whatever this becomes after this, which there will be more viruses that come after this. These things do go in waves, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad news is there's probably going to be a marketable increase that's going to be a hell of a lot worse when it returns in the fall. It does look like there's no reason to believe it's not going to return in the fall. Just because the states are opening up and the cases have dropped does not mean that they the flatten the curve thing, guys. All the flatten the curve thing really does mean is not getting rid of it. It buys time for essentially the healthcare system to catch up. Hopefully for them to be, you know, create some sort of vaccine or therapy. But it doesn't. All it does is it draws out the effects of the virus. Flatten the curve does not mean it actually gets rid of the virus. Mm-hmm. So the virus is going to come back, and in some states it's going to come back. You can predict where it's going to come back the worst. The states where it was, where there's high density of people, where they're forced to be next to each other on subways, right? Or mass transit, or all those types of things. So you're going to see a return of this thing. It's going to return where it essentially had its biggest, you know, stranglehold the first go around. You're going to see quarantines. But the question that I have, which is going to be fascinating to see how this plays out, will it be a regional quarantine thing? Will it be cities? Will it be, or will it, it's going to be another national thing? I don't think people have the, I don't think Americans are going to put up with any kind of national quarantine again. I don't. And I think people anticipating some sort of quarantine, they're already, you know, calling
quarantine ready.
They're calling in their boats and they're leaving. They're going to the countrysides.
That's true. I mean, you see, I think that you're right based on the speed in which we can track that. People didn't wait around to see for a couple days. It's like that. They're ready. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So I think that that's an indicator is how quickly people are to change their mindset. Even people who might be like the biggest Manhattan enthusiast ever, maybe this is what, you know, they can still visit, but they're maybe not going to live there anymore. So I think that'll be interesting. It'll also maybe be that maybe not the whole population of a town or a state is quarantined. Maybe, you know, if you're over 70 or 80 years old, you've got to stay home. It would be nice if they said, you know what, you're, as you would say, grown ass humans, you know, make your own decisions, here are the risks, and don't do something stupid because, you know, you don't want to be the one infecting and you don't want to be the one infected. Our own house call doctor, who I have a lot of respect for because he's taken very good care of us as we've come and gone from strep throats all school year, I asked him about it and he said, look, you know, even if there is someday a treatment or a vaccine, he said, don't think for a second this is going to be the only virus you ever hear about in your lifetime.
Yep.
It's going to come and go. You're going to have to deal with it. Society is going to have to have is going to have to develop a tolerance for the fact that there will be more of these nasty viruses around. And, you know, we're all going to have to deal with it together. But don't think that you're going to wake up one day and it's all going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's coming from an educated doctor who's, I mean, he's the one that told us, I think in February, that this was going to be a thing.
He did.
Because we wanted to go to Europe this year. He's like, nope, watch this video. And he sent us, you know, like an interview. I can't remember if it was the CDC or what it was, but it was a bunch of doctors talking about that this is a real thing. And he said, you know, this is, you know, one of many, and it also may mutate, and, you know, this is life, was his thing.
He didn't want us to go to Florida for Amelia Island, the Concord.
I know, that was our last hurrah.
Yeah, he told us not to go. We went anyway.
Yeah, but that was very close to, that was the first week of March.
Yep.
But he kind of saw it coming, and that's been his philosophy. And it's interesting, he told me too that he's had to change his business because he said, you know, I'm a house call doctor and people don't even want me in their house. So he's doing a lot of telemedicine and video medicine, and he's also the guy that's administering all these tests.
I didn't tell you. So we're talking to different people about sponsoring our podcast. And Julie and I are trying to only have sponsors that are products that we use. And a lot of the products we use have no interest in sponsoring podcasts, so I'm having to dig pretty deep. Well, I came across one called Rocca Eyewear, because Julie and I are unfortunately both having to wear glasses now pretty much all the time. Mm-hmm. And they have, and I didn't know about this, do you know you could have your eyes checked via video conference now?
No way.
You can do
that's
an online.
Cool.
I know.
Really?
It's $25. You can have an online eye test.
That's bizarre. How do they see deep enough into your eye?
I didn't actually do it because I just had my eyes checked, right? I just had them checked like 3 months ago.
Yeah, but that's under the category of, you know, video medicine.
Right. But think about that this is a good point though. This is for example. So if you, if ophthalmologists are going to have a problem, ophthalmologists made all their money off the margins on eyeglasses.
Yep.
And with all these eyeglass companies that were selling eyeglasses online, you go to an ophthalmologist and pay them $25 and get your, you know,
your exam.
your eye prescription, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. And then you could go online and basically drop in that prescription in any online eyeglass making place, and then you have your eyeglass, you know, they'll be shipped to you. It wasn't the same experience because they're not going to be fit to your eyes and size to your eyes, and there's a lot of art and science to getting glasses to actually work. Having ordered them online before and having them done by a professional, there's definitely a big difference. You know, I couldn't even use transitions for or progressive lenses when I tried to get them from, what was that, a Warby Parker. Mm-hmm. And then when we had them done by a professional, you know, doctor, guess what? I can use them no problem. But the moral of the story is, if all of a sudden you can start having the same or very close experience, what's going to happen to the ophthalmologist?
Gone. That's it.
Right. Seriously.
You know, or they'll all be online. They'll have to adapt.
But how about that whole profession? Who's going to go to medical school to become an ophthalmologist if they have to compete with things online?
And the
prices
will probably come down.
Right. Exactly. It'd be like, who's going to open up a bookstore because you can buy a book on Amazon where there's no margin in it?
I know. Well, even, you know, Zoe's latest sore throat, you know, but he was asking like...
You should start counting them.
I think that's like 12 for the year. You know, if you have white spots on top of the redness of your throat, that's an indicator of strep. He doesn't necessarily have to come here and swab her down to know the likelihood, at least with a reasonable belief, that she had it or didn't have it. So, you know, I think things are changing on that. I think you're going to see so much more online because we were forced into it. It's like the a digital revolution, perhaps.
The online experience, though, I have to say, through Zoom and all these others, it's not good enough yet.
No, it's adequate. But yeah, I don't think it's definitely not superior.
Mm-mm. I think probably...
I think parts of it are. Parts of it are pretty nice, but I don't think that it's universally superior.
It's not going to... it doesn't replace... It only... I don't know. Being in front of people or talking to someone in real life, a Zoom is maybe 10%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one reason people like to go to those events is that they get the familiarity and the networking.
Well,
and
the point
is... like to be around people.
What about an Oculus? You know, what what about an immersive thing that you can put on your head that basically is a sort of an all-immersive 3D type, you know...
Well, you have EXP World.
Well, yeah. EXP World, for example.
A version of that.
A version of that. So, you know, EXP World, you're an avatar in a real world. It's essentially like a high-end video game. But it's a real estate brokerage. You can go to different offices and you can talk to different agents. You can talk to, you can go to education training events. Mm-hmm. Julie and I did a couple training events in the EXP World, and it is bizarre. You're standing in front of one of them was almost 1,000 people, and you can't see their faces necessarily. You see the outlines of where they're sitting, just like if you're up on stage in front of 1,000 people. But the last time Julie and I did it for EXP, we were in our workout clothes. You know, we were sitting on our back lanai, you know, looking out at a golf course with the ocean in the distance, with, you know, parrots flying by being too loud, you know. And we were in EXP World presenting to 1,000 people while having Diet Cokes, you know. And the feedback afterwards was wonderful. The number of people that, we had a call to action where they could get access to the free coaching program. And if you guys haven't done that yet, text the word survival to 31996. Text the word survival to 31996. And the number of people we had that took us up on that was, you know, virtually all of them. And I got to thinking after that experience, yes, it's not the same as being in real life, but that particular week, we probably did maybe 10, well, probably more like 20 live events in front of groups of people of at least probably 20 people, mostly over 100.
Sure.
And we didn't have to go anywhere.
No, it does. I was thinking, you know, it does beat jumping on a plane, doing the hotel thing, you know, and
such
it's more efficient.
Hassle.
We wouldn't have been able to do physically, logistically, 20 events in 1 week.
Well, so we are talking about inflation and deflation. Of course, it's Sunday. We allow ourselves to get
meander.
We don't care. I mean, what we talked about today, Bigfoot, sex dolls, aliens,
cicadas.
Spaceships, cicadas. Okay, this is the Sunday show, guys. We warned you when you started listening. So as far as inflation deflation goes, that's the cycle that's most likely to happen is you're going to have a cycle of deflation, and we're going to be experiencing it even in real estate, even with the seller's market. You're going to see an increase in values. But then as that sells off and the market's satisfied, there's not going to be an insurmountable amount of people that are going to continue to want to buy houses because of all the headwinds of the economy, unemployment and uncertainty, all the things we talk about. So then you're going to see deflation. That's going to take hold in housing. And so when's the deflation going to be noticeable? When the mortgage forbearance programs run their course, because then all the people that were holding on by dear life just because of the fact that they had a forbearance are going to have to let go. And a lot of those people are maybe going to have to let go for the sake of taking new jobs or taking new, who knows, lifestyles. Maybe they're going to move to the countryside and they're going to become organic farmers. You don't know. Maybe they're going to be on Elon's, you know, rocket ship going to the, you know, Universal Space Station. You don't know. Mm-hmm. So the moral of the story is we're not going to really see the full effects of this economic plague play out probably until this time next year. And when that happens, then you're going to see marketable deflation and more deflation in housing. But at the same time, here's what's going to happen. You guys can hold us to this. We're pretty resolved that this is the predicted path. You're going to see inflation in other things, which here, this is like other things. I mean, everything, computers, desks, as I said in our little office here, food. But the inflation, in other words, the cost of things increasing, is already obvious in plane fare. So when you're talking about, for example, the viability of doing live events that are out of state that you have to fly to, if all of a sudden you have to, like Julie and I, to fly business class or first class from here to Texas, what is it for, you know, four of us with my mom, how much does it cost? A couple grand maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, and coach tickets might cost for the four of us like $600 to $800. Mm-hmm. But we take, you know, French bulldogs with us, and we need
High maintenance.
We're high maintenance, exactly. It's just simple.
Business clothes have to arrive perfectly.
We have an 80-year-old that flies with us,
and six-year-old,
and we have a 6-year-old, and we have a 300-year-old French bulldog,
and a six-month-old.
So we're, it's a little bit of a shit show. Let's just put it that. So we always fly business class because they give you, frankly, a lot more room. Yeah. Well, anyway, if all of a sudden the normal cost of flying to an event in, let's say, Austin, Texas, where Julie and I used to live, if flying to Austin, Texas is no longer $2,000, but now it's $12,000, I'm going to think twice.
Yeah.
If your coach seats flying back in cattle class via Yak Air now costs, you know, 10 times as much or 5 times as much, if your cheap seats that you used to be able to fly
1,000 instead of 250 or whatever the translation
or 2,500 opposed to 500, you're going to really think now, what else is going to increase? The cost of the event. The actual cost of the food, the event, the cost of the ticket.
Cost of food has already gone up.
I know, an enormous amount. But the cost of food really could be argued the increase of cost was because the supply chains were screwed up. But the real cost is because after all the unused inventory or all the unsold inventory gets sold off, then I think you're going to see the real inflation take hold. Mm-hmm. Just because it costs more to produce anything. And then you have this whole reversal of, essentially businesses who have been looking at, well, I make, you know, whatever I make, right? I make computers or I make, but I have one part made here. I have another part made there. I've assembled in China. I have all these different things that are, this globalism trend is definitely going to reverse itself. It already is. And people are going to start saying to themselves, what the hell? Why am I not just basically invested in businesses that were closer to me? Which I think ultimately, guys, this lends to a whole new vision of the future, version of the future that could lead big businesses to come back home, which leads all their, you know, ancillary product suppliers that go into making whatever it is that they make all coming back home. And you're going to see these big, fast growing economies like China and whatnot. They're the ones that are going to be on their heels, you know, and you're going to see other countries that were just starting to emerge from long periods of depression and horribleness financially, like Vietnam and all these other countries that had become the new global superpowers for manufacturing, they're then going to start suffering because people are going to start saying, you know what?
I need to be able to make that at home.
I'm going to make that at home. And so these are the other things that you guys can look forward to. And this is the reason that overall, this whole, you know, seismic shift in everything, it's not just going to stop at face masks or lines or Starbucks, you know, and all these other things. Everything is going to change. And I think ultimately they're going to change for the better. Yes, we're going to become a much more unified, this is my hope, maybe it's a fantasy, but even with the some states taking a draconian lockdown approach and other states not taking a draconian lockdown approach, yes, you could have a huge political shift that happens because of the fact that you might have some states, maybe the government that eventually is in place is a socialistic lockdown, control the people type government, national government. But maybe there's whole states that say, you know what, that's not what our people want, and we're not going to follow the lead. You see that happening now with the governors that are in conflict with some of the things coming out of the federal government. The governor's saying, we're going to keep people on lockdown, and we're going to follow our own rules, and, you know, it's in conflict. Well, it could reverse. What if all of a sudden the, you know, federal government is their draconian lock you down type, and then the states say, you know what, nope, we're not doing that. You know, I could see Texas, for example, easily going its own way. And California could go its own way just for the opposite reason. So these are the kind of interesting things that might happen. Then that's your doomsday scenario. If there's an actual division of sort of a civil war type situation, that's your absolute worst case scenario. But some people are predicting that that's the natural outcome of, you know, and maybe it's just a regional, who knows, right? We don't know. Those are your worst case scenarios. But things like that are going to play out. And so what, through all of the uncertainty and all the things that are going to, you're going to start reading about and hearing about and thinking about and all the things you're going to be exposed to, I just want you to remember a couple things. Number one, you are the result of people who have lived through far worse pandemics, economic crises,
wars,
shit shows, being traced by Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, the worst things that could ever happen to humanity. The people that came before you, that made you, that made your grandparents, your grand's great, all the way back, they lived through all of this so you could be here. So it's your job to basically think not just of yourself, but of the fact that you need to essentially live for the generations that are coming after you in honor of the people that made it so you could survive and you could live and you could enjoy life and your children could enjoy life. You need to be in massive, I know it's totally counterintuitive, but this is really the only way to think. You need to be in such a high level of appreciation for being alive during this time of change. Because you get to live through this ridiculous historical era, but also because you can, if you choose to, be part of what comes next. We're not going to, you know, we are really doing our best to be as middle of the road as far as our opinions as possible and helping you guys create your own unified vision of the future. We're going to tell you what ours is. We're going to tell you why we might be right and why we might be wrong. But ultimately, what we want you to be ultimately is not dependent on someone else telling you how to think. Because if you are then going to start being reliant on somebody else having to tell you how to think, you're just going to become the house cat. And life does not usually end too well for the house cat. Usually ends with an impacted molar, you know, 400 pounds with its patches of fur falling out. Julie's got a frowny face on.
Remembering our deceased cats, thanks.
Yeah, we used to have a...
That's true.
When we first got married, and we were 20 and 21, we wanted to adopt two cats. So the Humane Society was having sell cat drive.
Adoption day.
And so we went to the adoption day. And when we got there, they put up a sign, 2 for 1. And of course, we couldn't then just say, we just want 2. Yeah. We ended up with 4. So we had at one point, actually 5 cats all at once. And yeah, that was pretty awful, to be honest.
Too many cats.
We are zookeepers. Yeah. But, you know, so anyway, we digress.
It was fun when they were kittens.
Yeah, it was hilarious when they were kittens, that's for sure. So moral of the story here is be incredibly grateful for being alive right now. Be incredibly grateful for your hardships even because you're going to learn from them. But also understand there will never be a time in our entire lives when there's going to be so much opportunity. And just putting my cards on the table, the greatest opportunity for agents right now is learning how to be powerful listing agents and knowing how to solve agents or knowing how to solve sellers' problems, of which there's going to be a massive diversity of different, you know, intertwinings of issues. And we're going to help you through that with our coaching program. Julie and I are the only coaching organization in the country that has the depth and breadth of knowledge that we do. We never specialized in a particular niche. We never just said we're going to be the prospecting company, or we never said we're going to be the social networking company. We never said we're going to be the referral-based company. We knew that all of those had a place in a viable agent's business and brokerage's business, but it couldn't be your only thing. And ultimately, we want you to have the confidence, and the confidence that only comes from knowing that you have the skills to walk into any room with any seller and know how to solve any set of problems. And if you don't have that, you won't make it. And there'll be other people that basically will adopt to that skill set and mindset, and they will make it. In the intervening months, as the country sort of decides to accept the fact that there's a pandemic and that's not going to go away, that there's an economic collapse, basically, and it's not going to go away, as people start to get resolved to the new normal, which is abnormal, this is your time. You have a tiny little window here to move past your mooring lines, move past your limiting beliefs about what you're capable of. And remember, all the generations of people that came before you, all the generations of people that had to live through war, hardship, you right now are spoiled. You're surrounded by luxury. Just what, 2 or 3 generations ago, I bet your grandparents, they would think you were a god living like you're living, and you think you're living through scarcity, which is shocking to think. Imagine, guys, just 10 years ago, if you were, like, say you were living through a time where, think how harder it was just 10 years ago. Now there's a global pandemic and everyone's getting money in the mail. Right? Now there's a global pandemic.
Even compared to the Great Recession.
That's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Now there's a global pandemic, and guess what? You don't have to make your house payment for 12 months.
And you can have all your groceries delivered, and you can have your meetings online.
That's right.
Oh, woe is you.
Right. You know, so what's going to come from this is everyone's wildest, you know, science fiction fantasies, all the things you could possibly imagine are going to go true. Personally, I'll tell you where I think it's going. I do think there's going to be a combination of what EXP is doing with Revella, and a combination of what, like, these sort of immersive 3D headgear things. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to put this thing on, and you're basically going to be in what essentially is a real life, a completely immersive 3D world, where you're not just going to see an avatar of a human, you're going to see the actual human, and they're going to see you. And you're going to have these experiences that are going to be not 10% of real life. You know, let's say Zoom is 10% of real life. I think Virbella is maybe 20%, maybe 30% of real life. But you're going to get to 75 to 80% of real life. And at that point, people are going to go, what? You know what? That is good damn enough.
Mm-hmm. Digitopia.
Yep. That's it. They're going to say it's good enough. This is it. We're here. We've arrived. We don't need to go to events anymore. We're not going to, you know, we can now tour houses that are so close to experiencing what the house is like. And so there's going to be a rush to technology platforms. And there's going to be a rush to, you know, but ultimately, everyone's problem and situation is going to be different. The seller's situations are all going to be different. There's going to be no uniform, normal real estate transaction. This is the world that we're in. Embrace it. And if you're even a tinge bit of a capitalist, which all of you are, whether you want to admit it or not, realize that the skill set in this marketplace and your urgency as in the lead of the buyer or the seller, and your urgency to learn, adapt, and always stay hungry, that's what's going to give you an unfair advantage in the marketplace. So I'm excited about that, and I'm also really excited about the future of EXP Realty. I can easily envision, and I really, it's hard for me to not see this. I see in Manhattan, there'll always be your Douglas Elements and whatnot. But I think across the globe, you're going to see competing, and EXP is going to lead the way, virtual real estate companies. I cannot see a world where there's any future for a small, medium, or even a large-sized traditional brokerage office. Yes, there are older people older than Julie and I who are uncomfortable, who have to learn to be comfortable with a virtual, you know, environment. But younger generations, they're going to welcome it, especially as the technology advances. The idea of going someplace for a real estate brokerage, it's going to be as bizarre as, you know, essentially having to go to a Blockbuster to rent a video. You would never even think of that. Some of you guys don't even remember video stores, which is hilarious as I say it.
Yeah, well, the younger generation or millennial crowd think that I get this question, like, why do I even need an office?
Right,
like,
you don't.
Like, they already think it's weird.
Yeah, you don't. You don't. You don't need an office. You need a notebook computer. You need to know what to say and how to say it. You need a good cell phone.
Yeah.
You need a good apps. Yeah, and that's it. And you're set. You don't need a big fan. I mean, obviously, you want to have a home office or someplace to keep your, you know, we are big proponents of dry erase boards. I mean, I'm sitting here surrounded by two massive ones. And Julie and I are addicted to them. And our real estate, real estate treasure map definitely is advocating you guys have everything out as a visual in front of you. And if you want the real estate treasure map, by the way, it's part of the free coaching program. Just text the word survival to 31996 and we'll text you right back a join link. But the moral of the story is be grateful, be thankful that we're living through this time of change. You know, if you were to think back just 90 days ago, how different everything was, just the physical world, but how different is everything inside your head now, emotionally? How much have you changed? Isn't that fascinating? I think it's exciting. Are you thinking anything, Jules? Are you thinking about your cicadas and your sex dolls?
No. I was just doing the calculation back. It really has not even been 90 days. It was basically February. Things had not, you know, gotten weird yet. And just the transformation of people. What I was thinking is, we often say that your job is to be caring and competent. And I have no doubt that all of our listeners are caring, but you've got to check your own competency for all of these changes. Are you adapting? Are you adopting new things that you need? And are you doing it quickly enough? You've seen in less than 90 days how fast everything in your world can change. You've got to be the one who is also changing with it and cannot be outpaced by it. That's what I was thinking.
And don't wait. The biggest hazard of all of you have is ask yourself, are you waiting for things to return to normal? I mean, that's the biggest curse, really. If you find yourself in this, I'm going to wait for things to return to normal mode, which is probably 90% of you, if you're being honest, you're screwed because you're never going to, you're going to always be in that waiting stage. And as it doesn't return, what's going to happen is you're going to start to feel profoundly disappointed and sad, and you're going to start feeling helpless, and then you're going to be easily controlled and manipulated, right? So just listen, listeners. Operate as if there's going to be no real vaccine or therapy. Operate as if herd immunity is the future. Operate as if you're going to have to decide whether you want to be a house cat or a big cat, a wild cat. Operate as if your future is predicated on your willingness to basically be of service to others and help others. And ultimately, what we've always said, which is so funny, I'm hearing more people quote us for this, but long-term, ever-increasing levels of success comes from doing what you don't want to do when you don't want to do it at the highest level, right? Doing what you don't want to do when you don't want to do it at the highest level. That's right now, guys. That's happening. So embrace it. Embrace it with two open arms, or embrace it, but keep your 6 feet distance. Maybe an elbow
embrace.
Bump. Maybe a fist. No, not a fist bump.
No.
Maybe just a thumbs up.
There you go.
All right. God bless all of you. We'll talk to you on our normal show tomorrow.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.